Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I'm joined in the studio by Frank Tolupko. Frank Tolupko is a 9/11 researcher and is on hiatus from doing a radio program on 9/11 in Great Barrington, Mass. Frank, welcome to the show.
Good to be back again.
Today, Frank and I are going to talk about the left-leaning Democrats' selective amnesia and hypocrisy, and that anybody in national politics is beholden to the deep state. And by and large, policies don't really change from one administration to the next. And our first example of this is with immigration. Many on the left are critical of Trump's immigration policy, which, if you care to look at it, appears to be an extension of Obama's immigration policies and infrastructure. But many on the left refuse to acknowledge this and did not say a peep when Obama was deporting millions. Here's Ben Swan on Reality Check TV making this point.
Well, we have shown you the tens of thousands of people protesting in the streets over the election of Donald Trump. They say a major reason for their protests, Trump claims that he will deport at least 2 to 3 million illegal immigrants. So if that is truly important to them, why have none of these people protested that President Obama has actually deported more than 3 million people since taking office? This is a reality check you won't see anywhere else. Yeah, the protests have been loud and they've gotten a lot of media attention. The claim is that President-elect Donald Trump will unfairly deport millions of undocumented immigrants. So before we look at the hypocrisy here, let's listen to what Donald Trump has actually said.
What we are going to do is get the people that are criminal and have criminal records, gang members, drug dealers. We have a lot of these people, probably 2 million, it could even be 3 million. We're getting them out of our country or we're going to incarcerate.
All right, so Donald Trump wants to deport 2 to 3 million undocumented immigrants with criminal backgrounds. And into the streets, protesters flow. Okay, but where have those protesters been over the past 8 years? Because according to the Pew Research data analysis that was released in August, get this, the Obama administration has deported an unprecedented 2.4 million illegal immigrants between 2009, when he took office, and 2014. That was the last year data was available. So with 2 years left on his term, Obama had already deported well above Trump's minimum estimate of 2 million undocumented immigrants. Now, let's go a little further on this, because if you take the numbers from 2014 alone, it's over 414,000 immigrants who were deported. It's not even his highest year. But if we assume that 2015 and 2016 will match 2014's number, then we can reasonably estimate that over the course of his term, President Obama will have deported at least 3.2 million people by the end of this year. So how many people is that? Well, according to governmental data, the Obama administration has deported more people than any other president's administration in history. In fact, they have deported more than the sum of all the presidents of the 20th century. So just let that sink in for a minute. More deportations than all the presidents of the 20th century combined. What you need to know is that the hypocrisy here is almost infuriating. If you are against Donald Trump's plans to deport up to 3 million immigrants, okay, you have every right, and you probably should protest. But if you are infuriated that Donald J. Trump wants to do it, and yet you were silent as Barack Obama actually did it, are you really interested in solving the problem? Or are you just opportunistically outraged?
So, Frank, I think Ben Swan did a pretty good job of discussing that. Did you have any comments?
Conversations I've had with my friends who generally are, not generally, I think adamantly opposed to what Trump is doing vis-a-vis people that are here that are undocumented, refuse to really consider what Obama did with this specific policy. Interesting, before Obama was elected a year or two, I went to a lecture by Zbigniew Brzezinski, an advisor to various campaigns and presidents, both Republican and Democratic, And he actually said publicly, I have it on tape, that what we needed in the next election cycle, and this is during the Bush administration as it was coming to an end, was an African-American president, because then we can do all these things and get away with certain policies. He didn't use the word get away with, but he said, you know, like put in policies that might be somewhat unpopular, but with a popular president, they could get away with it.
Yeah, and you know, I have some friends who are Democrats, and when I try to tell them that Obama deported more people than anyone in the whole 20th century, any president, they never heard about it. They don't even know about it. So the media is making a big deal out of it when Trump does it, but they didn't say anything when Obama was doing it, or very little.
Then I guess if they didn't hear about it, then it's not amnesia or whatever. They just weren't informed about it.
So either they weren't informed about it, or they didn't want to admit that they knew about it. And now we're going to hear another clip making this same point. This one is from the Al Jazeera English station, and the show is called, again, Reality Check, and the host is Mehdi Hasan. So here it is.
One of the many, many criticisms of Donald Trump centers on his pledge to deport, to forcibly relocate all 11 million undocumented immigrants in the U.S. in his first 2 years in office. But remember, this is how he defended that odious policy in the second presidential debate.
Nobody knows about it. Nobody talks about it. But under Obama, millions of people have been moved out of this country. They've been deported.
Now, annoyingly, he's got a point. Kind of. The truth is that the Obama administration has deported 2.5 million undocumented immigrants from the United States over two terms. 2.5 million. That's the highest number for any president ever. In fact, Obama is on course to have deported more people in his 8 years in office than all of the presidents of the 20th century combined. I guess that explains why his immigration enforcement budget in 2015 was a whopping $18 billion. That's $3 billion more than the budgets of all the other major domestic law enforcement agencies combined. Now, the Obama administration says the vast majority of the people it deports are people with criminal records, felons, threats to national security, which sounds reasonable, except that a study in 2014 found that two-thirds of deportation cases involved people who had committed minor infractions, including traffic violations, or had no criminal record at all. Take the case of Jose Marvin Martinez, who fled Honduras aged 16 after his brother was murdered by suspected gang members. In 2014, he was deported back to his home country, and just 4 months later, he was shot to death by suspected gang members. Or how about Giovanni Miranda, who arrived in the United States as a child and was working legally when he had a minor traffic accident in 2009, when immigration officers discovered he'd been charged with a minor drug possession offense 7 years earlier, they sent him back to El Salvador, a homeland he'd never known. 3 years after his return, he was murdered by a gang in front of his wife and newborn child. These are just two out of tens of thousands of real-life stories, real-world tragedies, that many say will forever taint Obama's record on human rights and especially on immigration. So complain as much as you like about Trump's grotesque deportation plans, but the fact is that he's inheriting the most sophisticated and well-funded human expulsion machine in the history of the country from his Democratic predecessor. And shed as many tears as you like for outgoing President Barack Obama, but never forget that until Donald Trump came along, he was the deporter-in-chief.
So the question now is, where were all of you Obama supporters and Hillary supporters when Obama was deporting millions? Why were you silent then? And why are you only speaking out now when Trump is doing the same thing? So, Frank, what's your next example of amnesia and hypocrisy?
Next up is Hillary Rodham Clinton, who, as Secretary of State in the Obama administration, was deeply involved with the events in Libya and the takedown of Muammar Gaddafi. She was scheduled for an interview with CBS Television on October 20th, 2011. Right around the time things were going south in Libya at that point. She was evidently informed before the interview began that Gaddafi had been killed or assassinated or whatever. And this is her reaction, which was never really put on the air, but was captured in banter before the interview.
So here she is, Hillary Clinton, talking about the death of Muammar Gaddafi.
We came. We saw he died.
Many people still believe that if Hillary had been elected instead of Donald Trump, we would have had a much more rational domestic as well as foreign policy. But as you heard from her reaction to it, I don't think she'd had a very serious approach to foreign policy and bantering about the assassination of a leader of a country in northern Africa. what I think is belied here is the fact that the reasons that we went in, and don't forget that she was Secretary of State and deeply involved in the decision to go into Libya. I think the reasons for going into Libya are much more than what we were fed in the press of, oh, we're taking out somebody that's cruel, a cruel dictator, etc. So why don't we listen to Gary Franke from the Patreon.com website, the Next News Network, where he's discussing at that point, which was back April 2nd, 2011, Hillary Clinton's advisor, Sid Blumenthal, sent Hillary an email, a rather frantic email, of why we should go and take out Muammar Gaddafi. These emails came from the release by Edward Snowden's WikiLeaks.
Okay, so here's that clip with Gary Franke.
Check this out. Now, some have spoken about this, but now Clinton emails have revealed the actual reason that she ousted Gaddafi. And, yes, these emails expose Hillary Clinton's true masters. Absolutely insane when these emails hit. My friends, Sputnik News is reporting that a declassified email exchange between the former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and her advisor Sid Blumenthal shows that Clinton was up to her eyeballs in the Western conspiracy against Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi and his Pan-African gold dinar currency. That's according to William Engdahl, who's made these statements after reviewing these emails. It states here that a recently declassified email from the illegal private server used by the ex-Secretary of State and Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton during the Washington orchestrated war against Muammar Gaddafi sheds some new light on the U.S. establishment's genuine motivation. Quote, in a newly classified Clinton email from Sid Blumenthal to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton dated April 2nd, 2011, Blumenthal reveals the reason that Gaddafi must be eliminated. Engdahl made this article, he revealed it in a magazine, New Eastern Outlook, quote, using the pretext of citing an unidentified high source, Blumenthal writes to Clinton, according to sensitive information available to this source, Gaddafi's government holds 143 tons of gold and a similar amount in silver. This gold was accumulated prior to the current rebellion and was intended to be used to establish a Pan-African currency based on the Libyan golden dinar, he writes. Quote, by 2008, the prospect of sovereign control by a growing number of African and Arab oil states of their state and oil gas revenues was causing serious concern in Wall Street as well as the city of London. It was huge liquidity in the trillions. They potentially no longer would be able to control it. Meanwhile, in 2009, Gaddafi, then president of the African Union, offered the states of the continent to shift to a new currency independent from the U.S. dollar, the so-called gold dinar. And the rest is history. See, Gaddafi was getting ready to challenge the central banking monopoly of the planet, the Federal Reserve, the banksters. And what did they do? They took him out. See, he did not want to be linked to New York. He did not want to be linked to London. He wanted to have currency independence from U.S. control. That's what he wanted. He wanted to be free from that. You know, if you look back, I mean, how long was Gaddafi, you know, holding down Al-Qaeda? And he was, I mean, we had some pretty reasonable relationships as far as I can tell. And then all of a sudden, he's about to launch a gold dinar, challenge the banksters. And like that, Hillary Clinton arms the rebels. They take him out. Christopher Stevens ends up being one of the casualties of the American side. And then what happens next? ISIS takes control of Libya. And then you've got arms being dumped into Syria. The complete destabilization even further of the Middle East. All because, at least for Libya's sake, the gold dinar about to be launched. See, if Africa was able to stand on its own with its own gold currency, they'd be able to prosper. They would be able to keep their money inside their local country. And that's really where all the power is. It's local. It's not when you submit to these central bankers. That's why local currencies are so powerful. And there's a lot of them out there. Anyway, amazing revelation coming out of that server that Hillary Clinton has.
Well, so as they say, follow the money.
Yeah, under Gaddafi, Libya became probably the most prosperous, I don't say probably, the most prosperous country in all of Africa, the whole entire African continent. They had the highest standard of living, and that's including the Union of South Africa, best health care, and all their numbers in terms of health figures were fantastic, mm-hmm. education, etc. But he was going to step out, wanted to step out in line and go in their independent way, and that just didn't go with the big boys down on Wall Street or whatever. I remember pictures of Gaddafi meeting with George Bush after 9/11 and saying, I've got some Al-Qaeda guys, you want them? And the State Department says, no, we don't. So he was actually trying to cooperate in all ways possible and trying to be an equal partner economically with North America and him being one of the leaders of the African continent.
Yeah, and you know, Iran recently decided to go off the dollar also in purchasing from foreign countries. And so just watch what happens there. You can already see the step up in the aggression towards Iran.
Well, going even back to the George Bush days, when he gave that speech to Congress about the axis of evil, that included North Korea, that included Iran, and Libya, because why? They were all talking about going off the petrodollar.
Yeah, so again, follow the money. And now we're going to talk about two more Democratic icons, Madeleine Albright and Bill Richardson.
Yes, taking a little trip down memory lane, or is it unmemory lane? We're talking about Madeleine Albright, who just came out with a new book called Fascism, A Warning, talking about the evils of the Bush administration, and much of the stuff in there is correct. But she has some stuff to answer for as Secretary of State in Bill Clinton's administration and her views about what the effects of the sanctions that were placed on Iraq, supposedly because they had weapons of mass destruction, under the Clinton administration. What we did there was essentially, according to the UN reports, etc., over 500,000 children perished because we bombed water treatment plants, we drove to sewage treatment plants, etc. And it was a horrific event in the history of that country or in the world. And Ms. Albright was asked about this on TV and what she felt about in the aftermath with the ability of hindsight, what she thought about those particular events.
And here she is, Madeleine Albright.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
Those were Madeleine Albright's comments in 1996, being interviewed by Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, the CBS TV show. She was then ambassador to the UN at that point. And you can see the heartless her response to over 500,000 kids dying. She, after the fact, a number of years later, deeply apologized for it. But what she apologized for was that she never should have said it. That she never said that she was wrong or that was a bad analysis of what was going on. She just said that it just slipped out or whatever, and she was deeply apologetic. So we have to take her honesty with a grain of salt there. I guess we can go now to another icon, Bill Richardson, who was a presidential hopeful at one time. He was a New Mexico governor. He spoke Spanish. He was supposedly good on immigration, etc., and he was being touted as perhaps a presidential hopeful. He was interviewed on Democracy Now! In September of 2005. He was Clinton's ambassador to the UN while all this stuff was going on in Iraq. So let's see what he has to say about those events.
We are joined right now in the Capitol building where we're broadcasting from by the New Mexico governor, Bill Richardson. He is a seven-term Congress member, served in the House of Representatives for seven terms. He was the energy secretary under Bill Clinton, as well as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, now governor of New Mexico. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy.
It's great to have you with us. But many say that although President Bush led this invasion, that President Clinton laid the groundwork with the sanctions and with the previous bombing of Iraq. You were President Clinton's U.S.
Right.
ambassador to the United Nations.
The sanctions were the correct policy.
Right. The U.N. sanctions, for example, the sanctions led to the deaths of more than 500,000 children, not to mention a million Iraqis.
I stand behind the sanctions. I believe that they successfully contained Saddam Hussein. I believe that the sanctions were an instrument of our policy.
To ask a question that was asked of U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Madeleine Albright, do you think the price was worth it, 500,000 children dead?
Well, I believe our policy was correct, yes.
So these statements by Hillary Clinton laughing at killing of Gaddafi, and then Madeleine Albright saying that it's okay to kill 500,000 children.
Because it served U.S. policy and interests.
And then Bill Richardson all agreeing with that is really astounding to me. And as you pointed out to me earlier, he has no remorse. There's no saying, we're sorry that happened, but it was part of our policy. It was collateral damage or something, but he just...
Because that's something they had to carry out. And they may have had perhaps better policies domestically to keep the home folks happy. But when it came to foreign policy, it didn't seem that there was any difference between Republicans, Democrats, right-wingers, fascists, this and that. It's all the same thing because the shots are all being paid for by the same people.
Right. The deeper state is controlling it all. And you can see that if you think about 9/11 through every president after Bush. Neither Trump or Obama have challenged the official story of 9/11, even though they've been made well aware of the scientific evidence disproving it. So again, it doesn't matter which party is in power. They take their marching orders from the deep state, also called the shadow government. And they do that with the wars continues.
Well, I guess one of the reasons it justifies a lot of things we're doing, the fighting terrorism, the usual mantra going on and on and on. And that's why we have to spend all this money for armaments, etc., to keep us safe or whatever. But the fact is we're the ones that have invaded. We have 900 bases around the world. I mean, how many Russian bases are ringing the United States? Zero. Right?
Right.
But we were totally ringing the former Soviet Union with many bases, and we're trying to even get more. We're in Poland and Czechoslovakia, Ukraine, etc.
So again, follow the money. And it's our tax dollars that are being used to fund those military goals of our deep state around the world, killing innocent people in the process.
Our economy is based on the military-industrial complex. If we stopped spending all that money, people would be out of work. And then some people like Bernie Sanders, another icon of the left, and on many issues he's good, but he's the one that fought for and maintains the boondoggle F-35 fighter jets to be built in Vermont, or at least some of it to be built in. And then those planes are exported on aircraft carriers to bomb other places around the world. But there are jobs in Vermont. So we can listen to Bernie trying to explain that away. Here's Bernie talking and replying to a questioner at a public forum in Vermont about the F-35. And interestingly enough, liberal as he is, he's tied down by the economic factors of the military-industrial complex, that the only peacetime budgets that we can have are based on military contracts. And in a certain sense, he's boxed into a corner.
So here's that clip of a member of the audience asking Bernie about the F-35s, followed by Bernie's answer.
However, there's a couple of issues that you've acted that are opposite of that and that blow my mind. In Burlington, there's a lot of good people working hard to stop basing the F-35. This is the military-industrial complex at its, you know, strongest. And you came out in favor of basing it there. Secondary, another issue is the climate change issue. You've said a lot of good things, but then when it comes to acting, biomass, which is tree burning, is the worst thing you can do for carbon. We've tried over and over, people have tried to talk about that, and the science says very strongly that burning trees is pretty stupid. So the point is, we can say things, point fingers, it comes down to what we do. And I don't see how you could possibly support the F-35 based on all these things.
Good questions. Good questions. I don't support the F-35. This is what I do support. Whether you like it or I like it or anybody else likes it, the fact of the matter is the F-35 is the cutting-edge plane, the fighter plane, for the United States Air Force, Navy, and NATO. That's a fact. Do you deny that? You don't think it is? It is the, well, you may think it doesn't work. The Department of Defense does think it works. All right, I don't want to. All right,
I'm not going to let the two of you get into a debate about the technicals of planes because I don't know the answer. But I do want.
Let me just answer the question. NATO countries all over the world, that is going to be their plane. So the question for me is the plane for the National Guard? We right now have the F-16 in Burlington. It employs hundreds of people. It provides a college education for hundreds of people. So for me, the question is not whether we have the F-35 or not. It is here. The question for me is whether it is located in Burlington, Vermont, or whether it is located in Florida. That's the issue. It is not whether you're going to build the F-35. That decision was made. You may not like it. You may talk appropriately about cost overruns. That's true. It is here. So you're not going to get rid of, I don't believe, the F-35. It is here. The question of where it is located.
So we've heard some of the statements of some of the beloved icons on the left or the liberal left or whatever you want to call them. I'd like to read an excerpt from an article that one Henry A. Giroux contributed to Tikkun magazine. Mr. Giroux currently holds the McMaster University Chair for Scholarship in the Public Interest in the English and Cultural Studies Department and is a distinguished scholar in critical pedagogy. Among his current books are The Public in Peril, Trump and the Menace of American Authoritarianism, and another one, American Nightmare, Facing the Challenge of Fascism. So he's no friend of Donald Trump in any sense. Okay, his comments go following. The U.S. and its Vichy Republican Party, Vichy refers, I guess, to the Quisling government in France under the Nazis. The U.S. and the Vichy Republican Party has drifted so far to the fascist right that people such as Albright and Clinton come across as the heroic vanguard of a political and ethical resistance to fascism. Under such circumstances, even some outspoken Republicans, again without irony, such as Flake, Corker, and McCain, are viewed in the mainstream press as principled heroes, in spite of the fact that they have supported Trump's domestic and foreign policies, including his tax reform bill and his cruel and obscene budget, which not only offers $700 billion to the military, but condemns millions of people to a life of misery and suffering. While the call to resist fascism is to be welcome, it has to be interrogated and not aligned with individuals and ideological forces that help put in place the racist, economic, religious, and educational forces that help produce it. End of quote.
So the point that we're trying to make is that both the Democrats and Republicans are controlled by their puppet masters in the deep state. That's why many important policies don't change from one administration to the next. So does it really make any sense every 4 years to put all your energies and hopes into one of these two puppets? How many election cycles do you have to live through to recognize that the presidents don't do what they say they're going to do to get your vote? The system is broken, corrupt, and controlled, and we really need to change the system. Voting every 4 years and hoping that this new president will make things better for us and our country just doesn't make sense anymore. But the powers that be love it when you get all caught up in the elections instead of focusing on their manipulations and control. And I'm going to end the show today by reading part of an article written by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and it's called A Government of Morons and War Criminals. And here goes. It has become embarrassing to be an American. Our country has had four war criminal presidents in succession. Clinton twice launched military attacks on Serbia, ordering NATO to bomb the former Yugoslavia twice, both in 1995 and in 1999, so that gives Bill two war crimes. George W. Bush invaded Afghanistan and Iraq and attacked provinces of Pakistan and Yemen from the air. That comes to four war crimes for Bush. Obama used NATO to destroy Libya and sent mercenaries to destroy Syria, thereby committing two war crimes. Trump attacked Syria with U.S. forces, thereby becoming a war criminal early in his regime. So we'll leave it there today. Frank, I want to thank you again for being on the show today. Always a pleasure.
Great. It was a pleasure.
And I want to remind the listeners that 9/11 wake-up call shows are archived at the website radioforall.net. And that's the digit 4, so radioforall.net. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.